Good morning. My grandpa, Roscoe Combs, was a full-time preacher. When he got up before he started talking, he would stick a piece of candy in his mouth or a cough drop, whatever he had in his pocket, usually butterscotch or peppermint or a Hall's cough drop. So I've got one in my mouth, but he used it as his timer. When he ran out of cough drop, he was done. I started mine about 20 minutes ago. I got about 10 minutes left. What I'm going to do is stick another one in my mouth, so I'm just going to extend my lesson by a little bit longer. Appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. Appreciate everyone being here. Thank you for visiting with us. We have some visitors filling in, as Brian pointed out, for Emerson as he's recovering. If you want to turn to Ephesians, I'm going to take a lesson from there this morning. And it is good to hear that I'm not the only one coughing this morning. So bear with me as I go through this. Last Sunday evening, I spoke a little bit on the thought of priorities. It was one point that I really wanted to expand on just a little bit more from that lesson. In that lesson, I made a point that when we seek God's will, we must be willing to put it as a priority over our family and our family interest. And while I do believe that is true, it seems kind of harsh to say it that way. How can we leave our family behind and seek only God's will? I'm going to suggest to you that is not possible. That's not possible to do. But I want to expand on that point a little bit more. The Bible speaks volumes of how we are to interact with our family and how our family is to live for Christ. We can put God's will first in our lives without having... We can't do it without having our family, a major part of our life as well. Well, in today's lesson, I want to show you how much potential our family have and has in displaying God's wisdom. God's wisdom. And so part of that thought comes from Ephesians. The book of Ephesians is a great place to go when we think about the roles of family members. According to God. And Paul shows us how each family member is to conduct themselves in order to create what God sees as the family, the Christian family, the perfect family, and something that we all should be striving for. The thought I want us to think about today is, how can we as a family display God's will? As a family in this world and showing the world, how can we display His wisdom to all those around us? Our walk as a Christian and putting God's will first, how does the family fit into that equation? So that's kind of the thought I want to bring out a little bit, displaying God's wisdom through our families. The first three chapters of Ephesians talk about doctrine. Paul describes to the Ephesians their spiritual possessions and their spiritual position, kind of focusing on what the church is. These lead into duty, which starts in chapter 4, the duty that is displayed there. The last three chapters of Ephesians kind of focus on the duty that we have as Christians, as a church, because of the first three chapters, the spiritual blessings and the spiritual position that we have. I want to go back to where Mike read for us in Ephesians 4 and verse 1. He read that section there, but I want to really key in on just verse 1 at this time. Paul, therefore, I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called. Paul starts a portion of the letter here to urge the Ephesians to walk in a worthy of the calling to which they have been called. And so the rest of chapter 4 and part of chapter 5 describe how to do that walk. Walking in unity, the first 16 verses of chapter 4. You see the last half of chapter 4, walking in truth and holiness. In chapter 5, the first 21 verses, walking in love, shining and walking as light, and walking as wise. So that's how you walk. That's how Paul is describing to them. That manner in which you've been called, this is what you need to be walking as. Up to this point, Paul has really been focused on the unity we have with each other in regards to Christ's relationship that we have and that we share as a church. In chapter 5, it almost seems like an abrupt change in topic. And Paul starts to describe the various family members and their conduct. He's been talking about the church, the unity of the church, and then all of a sudden he dives into, here's what the wives need to be doing, and here's what the husbands need to be doing. The children in chapter 6, the first three verses, here's their conduct. The fathers, the servants, the masters, ending there in chapter 6 and verse 9. So you have a little section here in Ephesians that kind of key in on the family members and their conduct. It seems kind of abrupt. How does the unity of the church relate to the responsibilities of the family members? I'm going to go back to Ephesians 3 and verse 10. I want to suggest that what I would call what kind of looks like an abrupt change in subject matter may not be that abrupt, according to how Paul was outlining the first part of Ephesians. Earlier in Ephesians 3 and verse 10, Paul mentioned how the church is to make known the manifold wisdom of God, so that through the church, the manifold wisdom of God might be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places. Kevin brought this thought up on the manifold wisdom of God on authority on Wednesday night when he was speaking in that Bible class. How are we to walk in wisdom? The thought that I want to bring out, Ephesians 4, verse 1, the thought that we are to walk worthy of this calling, and we're also supposed to make known God's wisdom to all those around us, to the authorities and rulers in heavenly places. How are we supposed to do that? Well, I think Paul, in Ephesians 5, verse 15 through 17, he starts in, I think he's stating that it is through the family relationships that we can often show God's wisdom more successfully than in any other way. I think that's how this section on family ties in to the overall theme of Ephesians. That it is through those family relationships that we can show God's wisdom to the world around us. It's through our family that we can walk. And I think he's describing, this is an example, one of the best examples, I think, is what he's saying here to the Ephesians. Here's how you walk. Start with your family. Here's how you show God's wisdom. Start with your family. I think it's through our families that we have a lot of interaction with the society around us. Through marriage, we're instantly connected to a whole other family, to the in-laws. It's through our children that we develop relationships with the neighbors and their children and the schools and the whole network of school there and all the parents and children that are there. What greater way of us showing God's wisdom than to start with our family? So again, I think Paul's pointing out that one of the best ways to display God's manifold wisdom is to develop it within our families first, so that our communities will see it. It's through our families that we have great potential to demonstrate God's wisdom. Some of these principles that underlie the gospel message: submission, love, obedience, admonition, sincerity, fairness, just. I think these are the thoughts that he brings out when he talks about the family roles in Ephesians. And I think it's these things that we need to be displaying to the world around us. We can demonstrate in our families what is truly right and what is God's will, what is good, and prepare others to be receptive of the gospel message, starting with our families. So Paul's not abruptly changing direction, in my opinion. Instead, he talks about one of the most crucial points to get right when we consider walking worthy of the calling to which we were called. So I have 6 points. These 6 points, I want to break them down and look at the roles of these family members. The first one is submission. Submitting to God and others in authority. A desire, a quality that we need to make sure we are showing to those around us. Anytime you have organization that is functional, there's usually some form of chain of authority. In the family, I think it's God's will that the husband be the head of the family. As he points out, Christ was head of the church. And that the parents need to be in authority over the children. The wife is to submit to the husband in this line of authority. And I think that's the point there in Ephesians 5, verse 22 through 24, if we want to read that. Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything. Here's a huge opportunity for wives to demonstrate God's wisdom and value of an important principle found in God's will, that of submission. And Jesus taught the importance of it. If we look at Mark chapter 10, to go along with this, most time will be in Ephesians, so if you want to mark that, but we'll veer from it maybe once or twice. Mark chapter 10. Starting verse 42. The idea of submission. We'll start in verse 41 there. Hearing this, the 10 began to feel indignant with James and John. Calling them to himself, Jesus said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, to give his life a ransom for many." Submitting to those in authority, a quality that not only the wife is shown to do, but all of us. That we're all to serve. Through submission, I think wives can prove that God's will is best, and that can be displayed through our family. The second thought is love. Love. Exercising authority with sacrificial love. Let's look at the husbands for this one. Just as the wives were given opportunity to display God's wisdom, so the husbands are given opportunity to display authority with Christ's love. Let's continue reading in Ephesians 5, starting verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves him, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. The husbands are to love their wives just like Christ loved his church. He sacrificed himself for her. And they are to love their wives in a nourishing and cherishing way, just as they would their own bodies. Shouldn't we show the world how to do that? Christ's love is demonstrated with the husband. When a husband exercises his authority as the head of the family, and with the same kind of love that Jesus displays while ruling his church, that benevolent monarchy that Jesus has, he demonstrates God's wisdom. The marriage between man and woman can reflect the relationship that exists between Christ and his church. And that is demonstrating God's wisdom from the family to the world. The third point is obedience. Obeying those placed over us by God. I'm going to key in on the children on this one. Chapter 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Children are to obey their parents in a way that honors them. There are earthly blessings and there are also spiritual repercussions, depending on whether there is obedience or not. And there's also spiritual blessings that come from that obedience. By the child's example to all of his or her peers, he or she shows the value of obedience in the commands of God. And I think I'm going to tie this into the next point. Point number 4 is admonition. That obedience comes from a teaching. Developing others through training and admonition, not intimidation. The child has to be taught how to obey those in authority. And this falls upon the fathers and their duty. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. As a father, we are not to intimidate our children to obedience. We are not to provoke them to wrath. That would be discipline without love. Instead, we bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord, and that would be discipline with love. I think the world could probably fall into two major categories of child raising. I haven't raised my children all the way, so I'm not an expert on this, but looking out in the world, I see there is discipline without love, and there is love with discipline. There is child abuse, and there's permissiveness. Both of these would be wrong. The idea of child abuse is disciplining without love, without explaining what that discipline is for. Or permissiveness, letting your child do whatever it is. That's just loving them, and there's no discipline that goes along with it at all. There's no instruction, there's no admonition that goes along with that. I think there needs to be a proper balance. And I'm not going to explain what that balance is in your family, but there needs to be a proper balance of love and discipline when raising our children. Again, I said I'm no expert. Let's go to the text, to the scriptures, and read a little bit more. And I'll let it do my speaking on that point. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews 12, 5 through 11. The thought that there needs to be a proper balance of love and discipline when raising children. Hebrews 12, starting verse 5. Have you forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet those who have been trained by it, afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. The proper balance as God disciplines his children needs to be brought down to the family level as well. God shows us how to discipline and to raise our children in a family of God. God's wisdom on training and admonition can be shown by the fathers to the world around us, showing that wisdom of God. Point number 5 is sincerity, rendering service that is sincere, not hypocritical. rendering service that is sincere, not hypocritical. In the first century, servants were a big part of the family household. Some servants would have been Christians. Some of the servants were Christians. And Christians who were servants were expected to walk as a Christian. They were expected to act and conduct themselves as a Christian. Let's read Ephesians 6, 5 through 8. Back to Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5 and following. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ. Not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will, render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. This involved obedience, a sincere obedience with fear and trembling, an obedience in sincerity of heart as to the Lord, giving all that they have in thought and deed to the Lord. Even servants could demonstrate by example what true obedience was according to the will of God. One full of sincerity of heart, not hypocritical. By giving themselves first to God, they in turn gave themselves full to their masters. And this brings up the point of the masters and fairness. Exercise an authority with justice and fairness. Let's read verse 9 of chapter 6. And masters, do the same things to them and give up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. The masters of the slaves were to give up this threatening and to remember that God shows no respect of persons to anyone. It also mentioned in that verse that they were to do the same. The masters were to do the same as the slaves were supposed to do, which meant their treatment of these servants should be governed by the same principles given to the servants, to act as a Christian. Christians who had servants were to treat them in a special way than anyone else that had servants. By their example, masters could demonstrate the proper exercise of authority and reveal much about how our master in heaven, as the end of that verse, rules over his kingdom. The masters and servants each had their part as well in that family of displaying God's wisdom and walking in a manner with which they were called. In conclusion, we just looked at how submission, love, obedience, admonition, sincerity, and fairness are examples within the family that need to be displayed to the world around us. And while we need to make God's will a priority in our life, we can't do that without recognizing part of God's will is that we walk in a manner he is happy with and that he is pleased with, and that we display his wisdom to the world around us. Part of that is in our family and our relationships with our families. If we're going to change the world, if we're going to have any hope of converting people to God, to Christ, we have to start with God in our home. How we conduct ourselves in our marriage and our family relationships can greatly affect our efforts to make known the manifold wisdom of God to the world around us. I appreciate everyone's attention this morning. If you want to grab your songbooks and turn to the invitation song that we have marked. Living for Jesus, 676. I appreciate the song and all the songs that Brian has led. As we think about our families and whether we have been displaying God's wisdom properly or not, I think this song kind of helps bring that to our thoughts as well. Living for Jesus, that first verse, a life that is true, striving to please him in all that I do. In your family, are you striving to please God in all that you do? I want to key in on that, on the last phrase of the song there, that last, on the next page. My life I give henceforth to live, O Christ, for thee alone. Have you become a Christian? Have you put on Christ through baptism? Have you given your life to Christ so that you may live? So that you may live in this world around us and show his wisdom to all those that you come in contact with. for Christ alone. I encourage us all to think about this song and the words in it. Think about your relationship with God. Is it proper? Have you been redeemed from your sins? If you've fallen short from doing that, we encourage you to do that, to think about that. If you have been baptized and you've sinned and you've got something in your life that you need to correct and make known, we want to take the time to do that also this morning. And if you have anything that you need to discuss in those manners, we ask that you come forward as we stand, as we sing.